The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Big Ten Championship Week with Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Mods PDX. The future of building is here.
On 1080 The Fan. In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is poured by Pelican Brewing. Celebrate the season with a Northwest tradition. Add Santa Cascadian Dark Ale. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
All right, welcome back in. Hour two might sound a little odd to some of you P1s out there, or P2s or P3s. We don't normally start the second hour with the Daily Ticker, but today's Daily Ticker is early, and it's brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. Whether you are on the nice list or the naughty list, I think Dirt's firmly on the naughty list every year.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Celebrate the season with Pelican's festive brew, Bad Santa Cascadian Dark Ale.
Oh, oh.
And today's early ticker guest today, because we will do whatever we can to get this guy on the radio program, is former Duck legendary player and legendary broadcaster Mike Jorgensen. Jorgie, you can find him on social media. He'll be calling another conference championship game this weekend with the great Jerry Allen in Indianapolis, Oregon, Penn State, and he joins us now on the Daily Ticker. Jorgie, good morning. I want to ask you, yesterday was National Signing Day, a big deal to people in college football. Oregon had some flips. There was one kid that said, you know, one of the selling points and what worked for him for Oregon, and that caused a stir in college football. So I want to ask you, I encounter Mike Jorgensen in 1980, and I say, Mike,
oh,
I'll give you an Oldsmobile Cutlass right now if you come to my school. Would that have done it?
Yeah, Ford Fennel would have probably done it then. So.
Phil Knight designed a shoe for you when you were at Oregon. Jorgie, did you get that Phil Knight specifically designed shoe?
Isn't that something that's, you know, and again, with each into their own as to how they get excited and what they get excited about. I mean, being able to design a shoe of your own and let alone be associated with Nike, frankly, would be a thrill, I think, for any student athlete, you know, coming right out of high school into college. So that swoosh is powerful.
Yeah.
And it means something. And it means something in a good way. So if it becomes one of those type of situations where that's what helps draw players in, among other things, then so be it. Take advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, we want to talk about the Big Ten title game with you because it's an interesting and exciting matchup. Also, a lot of history from where these two teams last played to where they're both at now, especially with Oregon. We've talked to Anthony Newman about this story on the air. I don't know if I can recall if you've told us this. Could you just walk us as quickly as you can? What was being recruited by Oregon and in college like in 1980-81 versus what it feels like or looks like today?
Well, I mean, the social media aspect of it has just become huge. And the way that players can be promoted online, all the videos, all the all-star camps that you go to of high school players, position situations, you know, the way that people are promoted these days just wasn't the way it was back in the early 80s. I mean, you just, coaches had to drive to go watch a play. You know, they would obviously order up some film every once in a while, maybe from, you know, the high school that you played for. But their opportunity was either sending scouts out by word, maybe from people that they knew in that particular area. And then when word got out that maybe there was somebody pretty good in a particular area, they showed up in masses. And you know, again, just the social media aspect of it that hypes people up is the biggest piece of it, I think, nowadays. And so, I mean, I know there's a lot of other things that go with it. It's funny that, you know, I don't dial in probably to recruiting as much as I should. I texted back and forth with Andy yesterday, driving back from Memphis, saying, how did it go? You know, because I was in meetings all day. But it was one of those ones where you follow it all the way along. You kind of know who the dudes are, who Oregon is after and who all the big-time schools are after and that type of deal. But you dial it back to the early 1980s and mid-1980s and that type of deal. It just wasn't that way unless you were in a big metro area that was easily accessible by coaches like Anthony up at Beaverton in the Portland area, or, you know, I'm in Ontario, Oregon, on the east side of the state. Boise was the biggest and closest city. And other than that, you know, you had to pretty much drive everywhere you went versus hopping on a jet. So.
Right. Much different landscape now than it used to be. It is funny to think about how much the program has changed and what we would have thought maybe 30 years ago, saying, hey, Oregon's going to have maybe the number one recruiting class in the country. Just wild how the program has grown, and that's going to be on display again this weekend. I'm curious to ask you, before we get into this game, just what you made of what their defense did on Saturday night. Demond Williams, I thought looked pretty good for a freshman making his first start. Good athlete, ran around, made some plays with his legs. But to have 10 sacks in a game was wild. I mean, just under constant pressure. And it kind of connects back to signing day, where that was the focal point of landing when he got there, of how do we get better on the defensive front? How do we get bigger? How do we get stronger? Almost culminating in that game on Saturday night. They're going to need him this weekend again. But just your thoughts on that performance and that pass rush against the Huskies.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job. You know, what they did such a good job of is shutting down Jonah Coleman. And he was zero factor coming into that game with 1,000 yards rushing, and I don't know if he got 10. I mean, really, at the end of the day, when I looked at what his stats were, I think he had more carries than he did yards. And he was a guy that they had to have be able to have a decent game, take a little bit of the pressure off of Demond Williams. But, you know, Williams, man, that guy is quick. I mean, if he develops into the type of guy that he could potentially be, you know, smallish, and so he's going to get beat around a little bit if anybody can catch him anyway. But he's a speedy dude that I think was going to, it can cause a lot of people problems as he gets the experience and the snaps and can get beyond maybe his first or second choice. That's the thing that they had to do with him, was they really had to simplify the playbook. And if you go to choice number one or choice number two in your progression of receivers and they're not open, you got to take off and use your legs. But what Oregon did such a great job of is not letting him get outside very often. They've got the speed to match his speed. That's the other thing about it. When you've got linebackers that, you know, are arguably some of the fastest guys on the team, it's a good matchup to be able to have. And so I thought Oregon just did a great job of harassing him, not letting Washington's offense get into any type of rhythm all game long. They had a couple of drives. Every team's going to do that, but just did not let him get into rhythm at all, and sack him 10 times is pretty unbelievable.
Our guest is Mike Jorgensen, a color analyst for Oregon Duck Radio Football. You can catch him every game here on The Fan and all throughout the great state on the Oregon Sports Network as they get ready for the Big Ten title game this week and against Penn State. We've had the Penn State play-by-play guy, Steve Jones, on this week. We talked to Josh Pate, who covers college football nationally. Interesting, like Steve Jones at Penn State certainly knows how good Oregon is and what they're capable of, thinks this is going to be a good matchup because physically these teams aren't that far apart. Josh Pate yesterday, Jorgie, said Penn State's pass rush is better than Ohio State's, which if you look at the Big Ten all-conference teams, you probably wouldn't conclude that reading the names from where they're at.
He says it's better than Ohio State. What about Penn State for you when you've seen them, you've seen tape, whatever it be, what for you stands out about Penn State that kind of makes you wonder, how is Oregon going to do against this unit?
Abdul Carter is the first guy that sticks out like a sore thumb. I mean, he's got, you know, the amount of tackles for loss that he has, sacks that he has. He's their DJ, Uyunglele, based on the amount of he's got 20 tackles for loss. I mean, he's got 10 sacks. And that's basically what DJ has Mateo has. From a standpoint of sacks, they both have the matching sacks. Abdul Carter has more tackles for loss, so he's in the backfield a lot. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to take a look at Penn State's stats compared to Oregon's, offensively and defensively. I mean, they're almost a mirror image of each other in the points they score per game, their first downs per game, sacks per game, third down conversions, total offense, total defense. They're almost mirror images of each other. And you think about how many sacks Oregon had last week against Washington with 10. So they end up with 39 so far this season. Penn State's got 32. And that 10-sack game is kind of an anomaly that throws things off. So they're almost mirror images in relation to sacks, too. So, the first guy that sticks out to me is Abdul Carter. I mean, he just makes plays all over the place, particularly in the backfield. And that's going to be the key for both of these quarterbacks and both of these offenses. How do you protect your quarterback? How does Drew Aller get protected? How does Dylan Gabriel get protected? Do they get sacked? Do they get harassed? Because it can really throw an offense off if you can do that. And both these defenses can really throw the other offenses off.
You know, the weird thing, Jorgie, about this game this weekend is that there's not, you know, last year against Washington, everything's on the line. You win the game, you're in the playoff. You lose the game, you're going to a New Year's Six game, and that's kind of the end of your year. This year's a little bit different, right? You lose the game, and maybe your punishment is the 5 seed, which might end up being an easier path throughout the college football playoffs. It's kind of a weird feeling going in. I'm just curious to ask you, not only for this weekend, but going forward, where is the spot that maybe still is a concern for you? Like, oh, if somebody's going to get Oregon, that's what ends up, you know, run game, is it, you know, pass protection? The defense has been great, but at times we saw Genty ran against him and Ohio State threw it on him. Where's the weakness that you're looking at of saying, if somebody's going to get Oregon and knock him off, this is the reason it's going to happen?
Well, you did say one of them right there that would, I wouldn't say it concerns me, but at times it's been a little bit inconsistent, and that's the run defense. And it's not that, Penn State with Nick Singleton coming in, 750 yards or so rushing, he doesn't come in as a 1,000-yard rusher, a 1,200-yard rusher, but he's just good enough to hurt you. And that's what I think that's what Penn State's going to have to do to be able to really have an opportunity to beat this Oregon team. They're going to have to be able to run the ball. And Singleton's good out of the backfield, too, as a receiver, but they have to be able to run the ball. And there's been times this year where you just kind of scratch your head a little bit. Wisconsin's the most recent game where all of a sudden they're just shutting down the run in the first half, and then all of a sudden Wisconsin starts going off. They start gashing Oregon's defense and not necessarily scoring points, but moving down the field at times and putting themselves in the red zone and that type of deal. And so that's where I see Oregon maybe would get taken advantage of would be the rush defense. They can't let Nick Singleton and this Penn State offense get off in that direction, because that's where Tyler Warren all of a sudden becomes effective. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the guy that's caught 80 passes. I mean, that's just ridiculous that a tight end has caught that much and that many passes, and yet he is the main key for that offense to really get going. But if they can run the ball, that's where all of a sudden Tyler Warren becomes really dangerous.
Well, Jorgie, I was going to ask you about him because you just referenced Coleman having sub 12 yards, 10 yards rushing in that game. He clearly was a focal point for Taj Lapoy in that defense. Would you be surprised if Tyler Warren had a big game Saturday? Because I think I put myself in the camp of, I will. I know he's a great player. I've seen him hike a ball and then catch a fade route in the same play. I've never seen that in my life. I know how good he is. I would be surprised if Lapoy and that defense aren't just keyed on him and saying, you know what, other people going to beat us. Would you be surprised if Warren had a big game Saturday?
I mean, I think even if you focus on him, he's going to have a big game. He's that good. Oregon has seen some good tight ends this year. One at Michigan, obviously, that gave him problems, and And they knew he was the main guy that Michigan would go to if any receiver, and he still caught 8-10 balls. So I just think that Tyler Warren's going to have a decent game. He's going to catch balls. He's going to get his yards. It just can't be one of those 15-catch, 3-touchdown games. That's what you don't want Tyler Warren to do, because they find gimmicky ways to put him into that offense. Sometimes he doesn't touch the ball, but like a Tez Johnson, he's the alpha on that offense. You got to know where he is. You got to know where he's lined up. When they break the huddle, you got to figure out where number 44 is, and that's already a problem when you have to do that with somebody on the other side of the line of scrimmage. So I don't doubt that Tyler Warren is going to have a big game. It just can't be the ones that are touchdowns or one of the ones where all of a sudden he gets free one-on-one, beats an inside linebacker for, you know, 60 yards in a touchdown type of situation. That's what you can't give up to a guy like Tyler Warren. He's fun to watch. The big dude, 6'6", 260, athletic as all can get up, and he's going to be a key to that offense. But, again, if Dick Singleton gets off running the ball, he's going to be that much more dangerous.
There we go. Good stuff. Mike Jorgensen, longtime play-by-play guy for Oregon Duck football, getting ready for the Big Ten title game this weekend. All it costs is a Ford Pinto, and Mike Jorgensen is all
it's
yours.
All it takes, man. It's easy. Right. Easy recruitment.
It's very easy.
And a nice pair of shorts. That's all you need.
Some nice khakis.
Yeah. And some khaki shorts. I love it. Jorgie, thank you for joining us this morning. We always appreciate having you on. Have a great call on Saturday, and hope we can catch up with you as the Ducks get ready for the playoff.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right, there we go. Mike Jorgensen on the Daily Ticker, brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. Whether you are on the nice list or the naughty list, celebrate the season with Pelican's festive brew, Bad Santa Cascadian Dark Ale.
Ho, ho, ho.
Good stuff from Jorgie on the Penn State matchup. I totally agree with him. It's just limit the 3-touchdown game. I also, again, like, bracket him. I don't know what the number is, but like, if he has over 6 catches in this game, 7 catches, that means he's going to be a monster. And that's probably going to put Penn State in a position to potentially have a bit of an upset in the Big Ten title game. I just think LaPoy and Lanning are really good at this, like finding the guy on the team and saying, all right, well, Singleton might have a decent little day for himself. And
yeah.
But Aller, you're going to have to space it out with other guys. Tyler Warren is not beating us the way he's beaten other teams.
He has, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games this year under 6 catches.
Yeah.
5 games
this year. I think you
can
do that
then. Against USC, he had 17 for 224.
That's one of the best tight end games I've ever seen in my life.
Just completely dominated. I do like his point, though, on Colson Loveland at Michigan, because he's the only target that Michigan had. Oregon knew that going into the game, yeah, and he still ended up having a big day. So there's sometimes that you can game plan as much as you one around a guy.
Some guys are
they
tough.
Come with a wrinkle, and you can have two bodies on him. It doesn't matter. He's going to jump over you, yep, and make a catch, and hey, it was great defense, but a better play by the offensive player.
This story making waves in recruiting, and we'll kind of recap some of what recruiting was yesterday. We'll get to that next on The Fan.
We got a delightful little Thursday night football game on our hands tonight.
We do. Am I going to spring the line on this game?
Oh, I need to check. Ooh. Is the hook still there, or is it gone?
I'll see. Let me
check.
We'll
get to that later. Yeah. It's not pressing. Recruiting day yesterday, National Signing Day. Coincidentally, was my birthday, so I'll be fully transparent. I completely didn't follow this most of the day.
You weren't glued to 24/7's no, live YouTube feed all afternoon. What the hell is the matter with
you? Taylor Estes and Brandon Huffman are great friends of the program.
They are.
They carried the banner yesterday for 24/7, did an exceptional job.
I watch a lot of it, man. They do. They're my kind of go-to recruiting site. They had wall-to-wall coverage with, yeah, live announcements. It was a lot of great analysts on their network. They did an unbelievable job.
So I'm just going to use them because I don't want to dabble in like all the others. There's like 5 of these things, and I don't know who to believe and, you know, who's accurate. Yesterday, I was on the program. We talked about Oregon and how they invest their money with, you know, high school versus portal. And I, something to the effect of like, Lanning and Oregon don't feel like they need to be giving bags to kids at quarterback. You can wait for that. And then later in the day, they flipped the kid from Cal.
Darren Sagapotule, well, whatever, you, yeah, know.
He's a Duck.
That aged well.
He's a Duck. He also, it was interesting, I was watching Lanning's press conference last night. He credited the primary recruiter in that case was Dylan Gabriel. That Dylan Gabriel was a quarterback at the Elite 11 event, which is where JKS, which is what I'm going to stick with for now.
Until, yeah, because we don't want to say the name wrong.
Until I get more comfortable with the last name, where he kind of started to pop. He was a 3-star kid, I think, going into his senior year. And then he ended up torching everybody and breaking all the Hawaii State passing records.
Pauly Connection.
Oregon's got a great lineage with Hawaiian quarterbacks. And Gabriel met him at the Elite 11, and he came back and told the staff, he was like, dude, this kid's, you guys recruiting this kid? He's pretty good. And then his profile continued to rise and rise and rise as the season went on in Hawaii. And so Lanning actually last night said that Dylan Gabriel was one of his primary recruiters because, like, Gabriel grew up idolizing Marcus Mariota, one of the reasons he wanted to come to Oregon and wear number 8 and do the whole thing. This kid grew up idolizing Dylan Gabriel. He was the quarterback that was slightly ahead of him that he grew up when he was 10, 11, looking like, I want to be like that guy. And so Gabriel had a big hand in him.
So does he ask Gabriel to wear 8, or does he still got to talk to Mariota?
That's a good question. I don't know how that works. I think they all need to ask Anthony Newman. Anthony Newman's the OG number 8. They got to go through Q first.
I love Q. I do. He's one of my favorite people that we have at the station. I think 8's a Pauly number now, buddy.
See, they've taken it from him. It's no longer the Anthony Newman number.
Unfortunately, it's the Pauly quarterback number. Pauly pipeline now. One other player of note that was interesting, because Lanning had a good day. Oregon on 24/7 is ranked 4th in the recruiting rankings. So they were somewhere around 10 to 12 going into the day.
Yeah.
And they finished today mighty strong at number 4 on 24/7. One kid they flipped was a 5-star cornerback, the best player in the state of Alabama, Naeem Offord.
Yes.
And he was long thought to be Ohio State lock. Like, people were, hey, they got a good player in this 5-star DB. At his signing day, he did the thing that the kids do that I don't blame him, because I probably would have done it too. Get the hat. Everybody starts cheering. Hey, yeah. Wait, what? Take the hat off. Throw that out of there. I'm not going to that school. Grabs the duck hat, puts it on, says, go Ducks. CBS writes a story about Naeem Offord. Very interesting. He credits Phil Knight for going to Oregon. He said, quote, he played a big role, like a huge, big role. He's actually waiting on me to get up there. He's got a lot of stuff planned for me. He's going to help me make my shoe.
You're damn right he is.
And the college football world collectively went, wow, damn it. Because you can't compete with
that. Can't compete with that.
You cannot compete with that. The collective is well together. Lanning's a psycho and awesome.
Yeah.
Kilkenny, obviously a massive donor to their situation. The collective duck fund is good. You cannot compete with the head, or the former head, however you want to view it, of the biggest apparel sports company in the world, saying, why don't you come to Eugene? I'll make you a shoe. Okay, is that shoe ever going to hit the stores? How is this shoe going to be gauged? Doesn't matter. 5-star guy locked up because Uncle Phil says, we're going to make you a shoe.
They've been working hard on him for a long time. Naeem Offord committed to Ohio State about a year ago, I want to say. I remember him being on the sideline. I was walking around prior to the Oregon-Ohio State game. That was his big official visit for Oregon. They wanted him to be there that weekend because they thought they could beat Ohio State. So he was there walking around on the sideline. All the other Duck commits were trying to recruit him to come over, watching the team that he had already committed to lose the game, and then the team that's trying to convince him to come win the game. It was kind of a unique recruiting to follow. The smoke started to build in the last couple of days. Nike is a massive, massive part of this. There's no doubt about it. I also wonder in his own internal mind how much of the loss to Michigan and what's going to happen with Ohio State. Like, they're facing the reality they could lose their first playoff game and Ryan Day could get fired. Will it happen? I don't know. But there's at least a percentage chance out there that that could take place.
Can I interject real quick?
Go ahead. Fire away.
I love the rant.
Yeah.
I don't say this to, like, do debate stuff. This is my POV.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think these kids are making these decisions on that. I could be wrong, but, like, when we talk about quarterbacks who go to programs who have young quarterbacks in place, we're always like, how do you not see that you're not playing over that guy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of them just have alpha ego that think I'm going to win the job.
I just think it's as simple as, like, the bag's there. Great. You're going to be taken care of. You're going to be thought of in Lanning's mind. And, oh, by the way, you're going to have a shoe. I don't know how much of these kids watch this stuff. I don't think they do, to be honest with you. I heard a story that Oregon State recruits didn't even know that Oregon State wasn't in what was the Pac-12 anymore, that the conference had been blown up. They were like, what? And, like,
I have a hard time believing that. They don't know that the conference doesn't exist anymore, that Oregon's playing in the Big Ten.
Dirt, I'm telling you.
USC's in the Big Ten.
Dirt,
I have a hard time believing that.
I think our assumptions of that sport are nowhere near what the players are doing with it.
I might be overcomplicating it. That's fair. The whole, like, Oregon's not in the Pac-12 anymore. USC isn't there anymore. Everybody else has moved on. Like,
I'm telling you, I heard a story that a kid they were recruiting was caught off guard.
Was he from Antarctica? Where's he from?
But if the kid doesn't watch SportsCenter and he doesn't watch football games every weekend, how is he to find that out? He ain't going to a newspaper website.
I mean, I would imagine another coach recruiting against Oregon State would use it against him at some point. Like,
that's how he found out.
They don't even have a conference anymore.
That's how he found out.
Did so they he not eventually watch knew football? Then. I'm confused by this.
Look, I think there's this middle ground here. Like, I might be giving it too much credit, but I also think these guys know the trends. Like, I think one of the biggest selling points right now for Lanning on the recruiting trail is that he's not going anywhere. I think that's one of the biggest arguments that he has of, like,
I think that's more for parents than the players.
Yeah, I don't. I think a lot of players want to know who they're going to play for when they commit to a college.
I'd be fascinated to do a deep dive. And the tough thing with this is, like, we couldn't get the recruiting people to do off the record stuff. On the record,
I
think we'd be surprised how little the players know about this stuff versus the mom wants to know if coach, are you going to be there? The player's like, whatever.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think the player, if I were a commit, that would be a big thing for me. I don't want my coach to bounce after 1 year or have a guy that just hops around from job to job every 2 years.
We're also in sports radio.
We are.
So you're aware of this stuff.
The other thing, though, too, is that I think it's important to point out, like, the Nike shoe thing is funny, and I don't know how that's even going to look. The NIL offers are all very similar from big
schools. The money stuff, yeah.
This kid was committed to Ohio State, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't like Ohio State doesn't pay any recruits, and now all of a sudden Oregon offered him $2 million, and he, like, they gave Caleb Downs a couple of million. They have a $25 million roster. Like, you're not going from he was committed to Western Michigan and then Oregon all of a sudden said, hey, here's $1.5 million. You want to come play for us? Like, some of this NIL stuff just makes me chuckle. Like, that's the only reason that kids make decisions. I'm not saying it's not a big part of it. I'm not saying that every kid that commits to Oregon is committing because they love green and yellow and that money has nothing to do with it. Of course, money has a ton to do with it. I'm giving it credit for being a little more complicated than that of relationships, continuity of staff, the success of the team on that. You're not selling a vision anymore. You're saying, look at what we're doing. We're 12-0. We're the number one team in the country. So you got all that stuff working in your favor. I just know when the offer came, they've been working on that kid forever. And all these flips don't end up happening. Lincoln Kier is another guy, the tight end that they tried to get from Kansas State. He didn't end up flipping at the last second.
Home.
He stayed at home. He wanted to be the hometown kid and the hometown hero. Good for him, man. I hope he kills it at Kansas State. So not every flip ends up happening, but I know they've been working on this one. And the Oregon recruits have been working on this one for a long time.
My Biebs finished 65th in recruiting.
That's not terrible.
I went and looked
middle
at
of the
it.
Road.
Well, I mean, it's kind of about what they largely are. So to the credit for Bray is like they didn't really drop. They have out-recruited Louisville, Washington State. Now they're a big rival. You know, they lost in the conference championship game to Oregon State.
Yes, they did.
They out-recruited Tulane, Vanderbilt, UNLV, Cal, Boise State, San Diego State. Like, some of those programs might not matter to much Duck fans, but in Oregon State's world and in the Power Four level, like, out-recruiting those schools.
That's your new conference. You want to be better
than
them.
Those are all rivals for you.
Yes, you've out-recruited all your future partners and some P4 schools that I listed there in Vandy and Cal. Vandy had a good year. Cal, you know, humming along, but, you know, out-recruiting those programs as well. So they finished 65th. Is Alford Shue going to be at, like, Justin Autzen, or is it going to be...
I have no clue.
A swoosh? Like,
my guess would
only?
Be they make something and then they sell it on their NIL.
Oh, for the donations?
For the donations.
Mm-hmm. And or fans like in can the Ducks team store or whatever.
Or in the Ducks team, I mean, that
like
would
a limited
be
limited release type deal.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be in Nike stores worldwide.
On the average of recruit ranking, Oregon is fourth in team ranking. They actually have the highest player ratings. So they edged Bama barely, and they edged Texas barely. They lost behind in terms of the ranking stuff with Texas, Bama, Georgia, but player rating wise, they're the highest.
Yeah, they have one more kid they're waiting on. Andrew Olish is a tight end that has, I don't believe, committed yet. And I don't know if that's supposed to, I don't know the timing on that. I'd have to ask Nimick. But he was, I think that people wondered if he was going to commit yesterday. He's currently a Michigan commit. He did not sign yesterday, to my knowledge. And so they got a chance. They're working hard on flipping him. Tight end was a big need for them. They got the Vanderplug kid from Washington who did sign. They thought they were going to get Lincoln Kier. That didn't end up coming to fruition. So he's a high four-star tight end, so they got a chance to add one more kind of blue-chip guy onto that list. And the Oregon State thing, like, dude, I think you take mid-60s. I think that Nimick was on our show earlier this week, and Beaver fans were not happy with him. And they're not usually very happy with him.
We just got a tweet 10 minutes ago.
Did we? Again, that back and forth is still going on. Yeah. I think, to be fair to him, what he was trying to say is this is kind of their normal territory of recruiting rankings. They've had years where they've been worse than this. They've had years where they've been slightly better. This class doesn't have a one or two guys that maybe kind of stand out above the rest, if that makes sense. Like, Aiden Childs was a pretty highly thought of recruit when he signed.
Four-star kid.
Damian Martinez was, he wasn't a two-star nobody. Like,
elevated
he was
to four-star.
Elevated to four-star, yeah. Right? So those classes had one or two of those guys. You kind of say, that's the focal point of this class, and we'll build around it from there. The one knock that I would say outside of that is their quarterback, who I believe is the nephew or cousin of the Uiagalelei family, Tristan Tia.
Yeah, I saw their dad was kind of pushing Oregon State for how they treated DJ.
He did not end up signing yesterday, which I don't know if that was expected or not, but that kind of stuff always makes you worried a little bit. And now evidently he is going to sign in February. So that was the only, outside of not having maybe a bell cow that you look at, say he's the headliner of the class, that was the only other negative for Oregon State yesterday.
Well, Oregon State also had this. The portal opened. Andre Jordan went in it.
Yeah, he did.
Their DB. They had some guys commit, though. Like, Hankerson says he's coming back.
Van Wells, starting center, said he's coming back for another year. Trent Walker already said it.
Yep. So we got some guys, but the portal.
Oregon lost an offensive lineman yesterday as well. Shaq McCroy, who's a true freshman this year, didn't play at all. But
every program's going to be dealing with this. Every year, all the time. The portal's just going to keep opening. Sucking guys in left and right.
That's the way it works, man. Modern college football. It opens officially next Monday.
All right. We have a lot more to get into. Dirt and Sprague back with more. But first, Schultz with the sports update.
All right. I'll try and get back on the clock here. I do have...
Well, you wouldn't shut up.
I know. I'm fired up. I love signing day, man. Signing day is a big deal.
I do find it funny. Like, we can certainly highlight how they have an advantage to make a shoe.
Yes.
I do find it hilarious. Like, was there any reaction to Texas getting five stars?
Now, Oregon seemingly is the only program that has to deal with
it. It just really bothers
Michigan just openly paid $12 million for Bryce Underwood.
And nobody cared.
They said, well, they won a national championship. Why wouldn't he want to go there?
He might get a Barstool podcast.
Why would this guy go to Oregon?
Right, right.
Remember when I said last week
12-0 and number one team in the country. Yeah. Dan Lanning's committed. And
people nationally still kind of give Oregon crap, and you kind of poo-pooed on that.
Yeah.
Like, this look at that. Schultz is
right. Where Schultze was right.
Nailed it. No matter what kind of success they have, everybody questions it
along
the way.
Nobody's giving us a chance. Nobody is. Even the FBI, 54% chance for Penn State. Why don't you stick that in your pipe and smoke it?
I'd put a couple
everybody doubting us.
I put a couple hundred bucks on Oregon to cover already.
You're the Vegas favorite to win the championship.
No, we're not. I don't know what you're talking about. Get out of here.
Also, that wasn't your argument. Your argument was that people were criticizing Dan Lanning, the coach. You did not say recruiting and that. You said the coach. And I said, that's not true.
I said
Schultz was right.
Any,
you're wrong.
Any kind of accomplishments that Oregon's had. Yes. And I talked about Dan Lanning beating Washington specifically.
The topics.
But whatever. You know what? I'm not going to rehash this.
We
I was
mold
right.
arguments to win. That's how we roll. I do. It
embrace
is. I look, there is part of me. I do chuckle, and I don't get angry. I try not to get angry about it. I do feel like my school is the only one that deals with the idea that big time, it's only money, when this is happening literally everywhere.
Well, I don't think it's the money thing anymore. I think it's more like the shoe thing. You know,
sure, like there's no other reason to want to go to Oregon?
Texas gives kids Lambos, and
they
we don't really talk about that much.
Ohio State pays kids like crazy. Yeah. Michigan does.
Yeah.
Washington paid their own guys last year to keep their entire roster together. They get millions of dollars to their own team to make a run at a national championship. You don't think LSU's paying guys? You don't think DJ Lagway got paid to go to Florida? Jakeem Stewart signed with USC, by the way. He's a five-star defensive lineman.
Yeah, he was somebody Oregon was after.
The intel was that USC got so desperate because the recruiting class crumbled a little bit that they just offered him. They were like, here you go. Here's another $1 million. Mm-hmm. He signed with USC. Is that are we doing that? The only reason he went to USC because he got paid?
Well, part of that is the blue blood stuff, too, right? It's the programs we grew up seeing be consistently at
they don't
the
have
top.
To deal with it.
No, because they've
it's
been
the
doing
new bloods.
It. Yeah, it really is. Like, I'm trying to think of other programs that would fall in line here. But, like, for example, Ohio State took a head coach away to be an OC. And we talked about that because it involved a former Oregon coach. Florida State just did that, too.
They did.
And I could only imagine the reaction if Oregon loses Will Stein
and steals somebody's head coach as an OC. Like, there is something about Oregon. It bothers people. The ability to recruit well, and you can certainly cite whatever you want to cite for why they do that.
Yeah.
And the winning, it just, there's local pockets, there's Pacific Northwest pockets, and all throughout the country, it bothers people.
It does, man. Remind me how it ended for Don James in Seattle, too, by the way. Should I go look up those headlines as well? One other quick update.
More portal news.
Jackson Arnold at Oklahoma.
Oh, we talked about that off air.
Is this going to cost Brent Venables his handling of the quarterback situation? Going to cost him his job?
I think so, because I think there might be intel here.
Mateer's going to follow Arbuckle, you think?
There's a little bit of that. Yeah. I don't know how you don't connect some of those dots until we see what Mateer ultimately does. They just took the OC for Washington State away. We've talked about this with Day. We've talked about this with other coaches. Kelly, maybe Riley. I came to a conclusion yesterday that I think we fire people too quickly. Also, I think a lot of big spenders in the college football world, I think at some point they're just going to realize, like, you're just stupidly spending your money. Millions upon millions for buyouts and somebody else's buyout.
Now the next coach.
And I'm not saying Riley's going to turn it around or Day's going to beat Michigan next year. I'm just saying, like, I kind of think I lean a little more patience unless it's absolutely cratering to a point where had Lincoln won 4 games this year, okay.
Yeah.
And not that 6-6 is good, but it's like patience. Let's see if these coaches, like, we know Ryan Day's a good coach.
We do.
What degree? We could debate that. Riley, we know he's a good coach. He knows how to work with quarterbacks. Is he going to learn? You know, there's varying degrees to this stuff. I think they're kind of like that at Oklahoma. Got to give this guy one more year. Go hire OC. Arnold leaving's not shocking. Does the OC bring Mateer?
Yeah, probably going to happen. I'm curious if Arnold, what is left there for Arnold? That's an interesting. I mean, he was a highly touted kid out of high school. He did not have a good year this year. But when you look at their wide receiver injuries, Oklahoma basically had their top 4 wide receivers out all year. They had nobody to throw to. Bad offensive coordinator hire when Jeff Lebby left, which is why he got fired, and they had to bring Arbuckle in. Like, he was kind of dealt a bad hand to a certain extent. And he actually, by the way, could have easily quit on it, not quit, but he could decided to sit out and redshirt because he got banged up early in the year, and then they asked him because all their other quarterbacks got hurt and they wanted to go back to him late in the season, so he cost himself a redshirt year playing. Now he led them to a win over Alabama late in the season, so actually a team guy that kind of, you know, lifted them up at the end of the season. I'm just curious to see where he ends up and if there's anything there, because we've seen these reclamation projects at quarterback.
He'll get a bag and he'll
Penix, Bo, like, yeah. There's a lot of these guys that have transferred around. You're like, damn, where'd that come from? Maybe he's the next guy on that list.
You can't clearly define these players based on what you saw this year. Like, no. Jackson Arnold isn't top of my head of great passers in America.
No.
But he goes to the right system next year. I don't know if I'll bat an eye at him, like, being really good.
Good offensive line, good weapons. You never know, man. Have there ever been bigger ramifications for a game than this, plus some shots fired in the press conference? We'll get to that coming up next on The Fam. We got a tasty little Thursday night game tonight. We'll get to that in the final hour of the show. Has there ever been a game with bigger stakes than this? Saw this tweet the other day. It made me chuckle. This came from the Reddit college football page, which is a delightful account to follow. A lot of funny content for them throughout the day, especially on football weekends.
I enjoy the message board account.
The message board's a good one, too.
I think
it's
message board genius, and it's solid. Just every fan base saying the dumbest crap when their team's down.
This tweet read, and we'll get to some audio that goes with it in a second.
Yeah.
The Mountain West Championship game is on Friday.
That it is, Andrew.
Boise State is hosting. I thought we talked about it earlier. I thought the game was in Vegas for some dumb reason. No, it's at the home site. So they're playing in Boise.
Yeah.
They're hosting the Mountain West Championship game against UNLV. If they win that game, there is a very good chance that they not only, well, they're going to go to the playoff. There's also a very good chance that they could get a first-round bye in the college football playoffs.
It's also an even better, but, like, there's also another chance not only to get a bye. If Clemson wins, they're going to get the 3 seed.
They could get the 3 seed. That's that is on the line for them. If they lose the game, so you win, maybe 3 seed, first-round bye, first-ever 12-team playoff.
What a year.
Millions of dollars flowing into your athletic department.
Yes.
If you lose the game, you're going to the L.A. Bowl hosted by Rob Gronkowski.
playing Utah State. Has there ever been a bigger make or break game for, like, UNLV knows if they get in, they're the 12 seed. Like, UNLV's not getting a bye. Boise at least has a pathway to do that. Dude, that is a, whoo, buddy, yeah, what's the mentality of that team playing in the L.A. Bowl with 47 people in the crowd and Rob Gronkowski, like, chugging mayonnaise at midfield before the game?
That's like getting in your car and your gas gauge is broken, so it's at full, and then you start driving, and it goes immediately to the empty, and you're like, oh, I had no gas.
What the hell, man?
I love that you just probably forever with the L.A. Bowl will have Utah State, because Oregon State played in
always
that one
will
year.
Be. They play in it permanently. It's part of the contract. Utah State's in that game every year. That's the way it works.
That would be actually a fun, sneaky game, because, by the way, that's a disaster scenario.
Is it not?
What bowl? What program do you think of when I say a bowl game? Like, ooh, if I throw at you the Holiday Bowl, what team do you see in your head there? Do you have teams associated with different bowl games?
I feel like for some of them I do.
Yeah.
Alamo Bowl, for whatever reason, I think of Texas. And I know Texas has been in bigger games. I feel like Texas has played in a lot of Alamo Bowls. I feel like both of our schools have played Texas in an Alamo Bowl.
They have.
Holiday Bowl is a tougher one.
Because there's been some classic Holiday Bowls.
There have. Right? My team's won a couple. Your team's been to a Holiday Bowl?
Fiesta Bowl. I'm naturally going to be biased there.
You're going to go Oregon State, Notre Dame?
I mean, it's a Fiesta Bowl. Yeah. They played Notre Dame. It was a big deal when we were kids.
I go Liberty. Liberty Bibberty. I mean, how do you
Fiesta
not?
Fiesta Bowl that the Ducks played in v. Colorado instead of the national championship. That's always, you know,
you could also go Boise State in that because of the Oklahoma upset.
That was their big win.
That's one of the more legendary games of all time.
Sadly, I kind of now think of the Fiesta Bowl as the afterthought game because they've been screwed with the team so many. Like, UConn went to the Fiesta Bowl. Liberty went to the, like, they've had a lot of bad matchups, I feel like, over the last handful of years.
I hate to say it. You could give me a million examples. Husky fan could chime in on this one and say, no, it's definitely us.
Well, they lost to Penn State last time they were there.
I was going to say Orange Bowl, Mangino.
Yeah.
The whitest coach
in
human
next
history.
To the orange mascot, and they were the same shape and the same size, and one of them was wearing an orange costume.
Right.
I'm excited for this game just because of this story. Like, we know the winner's getting in, so that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole, you know, pathway to access for the new playoff that I like preaching about, of like, this is all, dude, Boise State and UNLV are playing for a chance to go to the college football playoff on Friday night in, like, 2-degree weather in Boise.
UNLV was one of that's the awesome. Worst programs in the sport 4 years ago.
They have Marcus Arroyo as their head coach.
Yeah.
Who blocked me on Twitter.
He kind of turned it around for him a little bit at the end.
He's at ASU now, and he's their offensive coordinator.
Go look at him. They took a step, and then they axed him, and then Odom came in and elevated it even more.
It ended up being the right call because Barry Odom's doing pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Haj Malik Williams is the quarterback at UNLV.
He's a fun player.
Took over for Sluka?
Sluka, yeah.
Who didn't get his money when he was promised in the portal and said, I'm out of here. Here is the quarterback at UNLV talking about Boise. Would you be offended by this?
I don't know what to expect. As far as the crowd at Boise, I've never been there. I don't even know where it is on the map. but what I do know is communication is always a key to victory. You know, if me and Jack aren't on the same page, we're going to have things that don't go right. So that's been vital, whether it's week one to week 12, 13. You know, that's the key to victory. So as long as we're all on the same page, I know we can execute at a high level.
And you think these players know what trends are happening with coaching?
Hey, geography's totally different. Totally different. Do you know where Boise is on a map? Yes or no?
Thankful, I've been to Boise.
Could you point it out on this? If I gave you the state of Idaho, could you point out where it is?
Yeah,
general region,
closer ish to Oregon.
I feel like Southwest is my pocket that I'm looking at.
Oh, Southwest. I have it more kind of.
Isn't it close to the border?
West
Boise,
Boise.
Yeah, it's like about 40 minutes
away. Higher,
from
I think,
Ontario,
in my mind.
You go a little bit higher than
I'm
going.
So, yeah.
Okay, I don't know if I could point out where Boise is.
You know, like
on a
pin
map.
The tail on the donkey. You got to pin where Boise is.
Who comes the closest?
Right. He's not even just saying that he couldn't point it out. He sounds like he never even knew that Boise was like a town until Boise State. I'm playing them. Okay,
are we both
this?
Right here? Because it's kind of south, but also it's sort of central.
It is.
It's an interesting place.
It's definitely west. I think we're right on the west part. I knew it was close to the border. I knew it was close to Spokane.
That drive sucks.
It's also a very tall, skinny state, so it's hard. Like, technically, it is the southern part of the state, but in the full version of the state, it's kind of central, if that makes sense.
I've taken both drives. I've taken the 84 drive to it, and when I was in Corvallis to go cover it as student media, Oregon State went there. I took the bend back way to Boise.
How was that drive?
Both of them suck.
Horrible drives.
Just 8 hours of...
Endless.
Eventually, it's like, trees.
Hey. Desert.
Yeah.
Desert, yay. Trees.
Yeah.
Desert.
Everybody forgets Oregon is like 70% desert.
Yeah.
Duck fans know this.
Not a lot
this.
Going on over there.
Nope. Duck players know this. They can be a nasty fan base.
They can.
Boise State?
Yeah. I encountered some stuff when I was walking around downtown, like not doing anything to anybody.
Mm.
Cars driving by, things were said.
Were you wearing Oregon State gear?
I just had like a jacket. It wasn't like a real flashy Oregon State
jacket.
Yeah,
just wearing a beaver jacket.
Yeah, it just had the OS on. It wasn't even like very obvious.
Not flamboyantly orange?
No. Huh. No, I'm not one of those people.
Well, that game's going on Friday, and the UNLV quarterback said, I don't even know where it is on a map, and Boise State fan or not, they're not happy about this, so they're going to let them hear it. I can't wait. It's a fun game on Friday night.
Rose Bowl.
Michigan is probably the first team I
really?
Think of.
Yeah, Michigan?
Probably the first one I go with.
Oh, okay.
If I'm going outside, like I think of my team, obviously, in the games that I've been to.
Yeah,
so if I'm taking my team out of the equation, I think Michigan. Charles Woodson winning the 97 Rose Bowl
with the rose in his
is
mouth.
A memorable thing that my childhood will never be able
certainly
to forget.
Certainly understand that.
We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Good little Thursday night game. It is loaded. Don't go anywhere. Sprague on 1080 The Fan.